1 Samuel chapter number 8, we're going to take a look, as I mentioned, about Saul. And unfortunately, I think that a lot of people do him a disservice because it seems like we're always focusing on the bad stuff that he did. And it's like we never really considered what a good guy he was. Kind of just a second ago, it kind of reminds me of Tim Tebow when he was playing football in college and how he was one of the greatest of all time. And then he shifted into the pros and he never made it. And King Saul is somewhat similar in that before he became king, he was an amazing individual, and that's what we're going to take a look at tonight. I want to bring a message tonight on the subject, God's Plan B. Following the Union victory at Gettysburg, there was an immediate need to bury the dead. It was fought the first week of July. The heat was causing the corpses of fallen soldiers and the horses to swell up and stink, including the bodies of the Confederates. More than 7,000 bodies were scattered on the battlefield, adding to the threat of disease was the stench of 5,000 carcasses of horses. Fires were started in order to burn the horse carcasses, and hastily dug graves were made in order to bury the bodies as quickly as they could. And even though the bodies were out of sight, a heavy rain would often allow body parts to protrude through the soil, exposing part of the corpse. And that's when a decision was made that there had to be a cemetery. Thousands of individuals, bodies decomposing, the smell, the heavy rains, had to be a cemetery. A date was set for the following November to be the day of dedicating the new cemetery. A plot of ground was dedicated for that, and immediately bodies were dug up, identified, and relocated to where the new cemetery was to be located. Knowing that this was going to be a historic occasion, Edward Everett, the most popular public speaker of the day, was asked to be the keynote speaker at Gettysburg. And then came the controversial topic. Did they really have to invite the president? Do we really have to have Lincoln show up at this gathering? And that's when Abraham Lincoln was viewed as the elephant in the room that nobody wanted to discuss. And when it was decided to invite him, the officials did so, but he was nothing more than their plan B. He wasn't their first choice. If something happened to the keynote speaker, Lincoln could probably step in and maybe give a few remarks. While riding on a train en route to the dedication service at Gettysburg, Abraham Lincoln pulled out a piece of paper, jotted down a few words that he believed would be fitting and yet brief. And when he stood to deliver them, they were not well received by so many people. The media was against him. He had so many people in the country that despised him. He was a divisive figure, and because of that, his words meant nothing to so many people, especially at that moment in time. And yet, over time, his Gettysburg Address was cherished by a grieving nation. As we come upon Israel's first king, we must do so with the realization and the understanding that he was not God's first choice. God didn't want him. God had established judges to rule for him. And Samson, he wasn't anything to write home about. But God still preferred to use him instead of Saul. You know, that'd be kind of a hard thing to step into, knowing on your first day on the job that not even God wanted you to be there. And so, just like Lincoln, things did not go as hoped for King Saul. I'm going to identify a number of problems here that came about. The first one, and we'll take a look in chapter 8 here in just a second. The first problem that had to be dealt with was the fact that the people wanted a change. They wanted something else. In chapter 8, we are told that Samuel had come to the place where he needed to step down. He had reached an age where he didn't think that he could really do a good job as a judge anymore. And so he had already replaced himself, so to speak, with two of his sons. They were judges in his place. But what he did not know was that his two sons were ripping the people off. They were accepting bribes. They were making money off of their position. He had no idea that this was taking place. And when the people came to him and they voiced their displeasure, "We don't want your sons," he was hurt as a father. He was shocked to find out what the accusations were. And the problem was, and this was the big problem, the problem was that these people, they had their own solution. They wanted a king. Every other country had one, so why can't we have a king? And therefore, the best solution in their estimation was to have a king. Take a look at verse number 4 in chapter 8. "Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel and to Ramah and said unto him, 'Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations.'" Following the death of George Floyd in 2020, there came forth a rallying cry from the left to defund the police. Floyd's death was used to try and convince people that white cops were guilty of killing blacks because that's what cops do. Technically, it was called systemic racism. In reality, it was nothing more than using the unfortunate death of a black man that was high on drugs and who was posing a threat to the police. It ended up, however, as being the catalyst for a demand to drastically cut back on law enforcement funding and redirecting those funds to other community-funded programs. And so there were communities, cities. They tried to defund the police. So how did that work out? Shootings in New York City within a couple of months increased by 81%. Carjackings in California rose by 88%. And the shootings of blacks by other blacks remained basically the same, which was 88%. Not the police. They were shooting each other. The problem of violence in this country is a very real issue. It needs to be addressed and it needs to be fixed. But defunding the police was not the solution, and it only made things worse. When the people approached Samuel, they complained about a very legitimate problem, and that was his sons. Samuel, I don't think, was aware of the issue at all, what was taking place. And when the problem was brought forth to Samuel, they didn't ask what he thought ought to be done. And the reason was because they had their own defund the police solution, which was make us a king. They used a very legitimate problem to bring about their own desired solution, which would turn out to be disastrous. So how should they have handled it? They had every right in the world to complain to Samuel, and he should have been made aware of the problem with his sons. But they were horribly wrong to dictate the terms for a solution. What was needed was a house cleaning and not a king. Problem number two, God gave them what they wanted. When Samuel carried the people's demand for a king to God, God did two things of importance. First, he had Samuel warn them as to the kind of king that they would end up having. They were warned that their king would take their sons and force them into the army. They were warned that their daughters would be taken out of the homes and put into his kitchens. And the result of this would be found in chapter 8, verse 18. "And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king, which ye shall have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day." The second thing that God did, he gave them what they wanted. Verse number 19, "Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, 'Nay, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles.' And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, 'Hearken unto their voice and make them a king.' And Samuel said unto the men of Israel, 'Go ye every man unto his city.'" When God created us, he placed within us a free will. And what that means is we're not his puppets. We're not his robots. And we are free to ruin our lives. And what God will do, he'll warn us, but he will not always stop us. Chapter 9, if you would. Problem number three, God was forced to use plan B. First thing we find here in this chapter is the fact, and we're going to slow down here on this part of Saul's life because it's usually skimmed over. God chose a good man. Verse number 1, chapter 9. "Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechorah, the son of Aphiah, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. And he had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man and a goodly. And there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he. From his shoulders and upward, he was higher than any of the people." Now before we take a good hard look at Saul and how he started out, I want to first make an observation that goes against how most people view him. What I'd love to do tonight, and we're not going to do it, but what I'd love to do is for you to take out a piece of paper and jot down how old you think that Saul was at this point in time. 18? 20, 21. He was not an innocent teenager. Take a look at chapter 13, 1 Samuel chapter 13. I want to show you something. Chapter 13, verse number 1. The Bible here says, "Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent." After only having been the king for 2 years, Saul found himself in a battle against the Philistines. So he assigned 1,000 of his men to be led into battle by his son Jonathan. He's only been the king for 2 years. And yet he has a son who is old enough to lead an army onto the battlefield. What that means is that instead of Saul being a teenager, like most people imagine that he was, when he was anointed king, he was a man probably in his mid-40s and his son in his early 20s. The reason that this is important is to understand that when God chose Saul as Israel's first king, he wasn't plucking out of the nest a young teenager. He chose a full-grown man, probably in his 40s, who's identified by God as being the kindest man in all the kingdom. That's what his reputation was as far as what God saw. By the time a man reaches the age of mid-40s, his character is pretty well established. He's not some fly-by-night young person, doesn't know up from down yet. Saul was grounded. He had his head on straight. His character was established. He was a good man with a grown son fighting alongside him against the Philistines. The second description of Saul, God chose a man of compassion. In chapter 9, Saul and his servant have been sent out to find some runaway livestock. In chapter 9, in verse number 3, it says, "And the asses of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to Saul, his son, 'Take now one of the servants with thee, and arise, go seek the asses.' And he passed through Mount Ephraim and passed through the land of Shalisha, but they found them not. Then they passed through the land of Shalem, and there they were not. And he passed through the land of the Benjamites, but they found them not. And when they were come to the land of Zuf, Saul said to his servant that was with him, 'Come, let us return, lest my father leave caring for the asses and take thought for us.'" Saul was probably by this time pretty much like the co-owner of the ranch. His father had sent him on a mission to find some missing livestock. Saul and his servant had traveled for miles, perhaps days, and Saul came to the place where he's ready to cut his losses. It's time to go back home. It's not that he was lazy. His concern was, Dad might start worrying about us. Now, if Saul is in his mid-40s, his dad may have been in his 70s, maybe his 80s. And Saul didn't want to worry his dad. And again, the Lord is trying to help us to see here that Saul was a kind-hearted man. He loved and cared for his family. In chapter 9 and verse 6, God chose a man who had respect for the man of God. Verse 6, "And he said unto him, 'Behold now, there is in this city a man of God, and he is an honorable man. All that he saith cometh surely to pass. Now let us go thither. Peradventure he can show us our way that we should go.' Then said Saul to his servant, 'But behold, if we go, what shall we bring the man? For the bread is spent in our vessels, and there is not a present to bring to the man of God. What have we?'" God is here revealing yet another impressive thing about Saul. Because when the servant recommended, "Well, there's a preacher nearby. Let's go and see if he maybe could tell us where the livestock went off to." And Saul's reply was, "We don't have anything to give him." Prophets back in those days lived off the generosity, the blessings of God. And therefore the custom was when you went to see the man of God, you brought a present because that was helping put food on his table. Saul felt bad about going and asking for help, and yet he had nothing to give to the man of God. What this is indicative of is the fact that he had respect for the preacher. Saul. Of all people, God chose this man because he had respect for the man of God. But that's not all. Same chapter, take a look at verse number 8. God chose a man who was teachable. And the servant answered Saul again and said, "Behold, I have here at hand the fourth part of a shekel of silver. That will I give to the man of God to tell us our way. Before time in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, thus he spake, 'Come and let us go to the seer,' for he that is now called a prophet was before time called a seer. Then said Saul to his servant, 'Well said, come, let us go.' So they went unto the city where the man of God was." Now keep in mind here, the Saul was the boss. He may have even been the owner of this servant, and yet Saul is willing to accept that man's advice as if he was talking to his best friend or perhaps an older brother. I mean, looking at this individual, I like this guy. Saul was a man in the prime of life. Again, he had some sense about him. He was a man of character and integrity. He had a tender heart. But that's not all. God chose a man who was also humble. Take a look at chapter 10, verse number 20. "And when Samuel had caused all the tribes of Israel to come near, the tribe of Benjamin was taken. When he had caused the tribe of Benjamin to come near by their families, the family of Matri was taken, and Saul the son of Kish was taken. And when they sought him, he could not be found. Therefore they inquired of the Lord further if the man should yet come thither. And the Lord answered, 'Behold, he hath hid himself among the stuff.'" Saul had already been informed by Samuel that God had chosen him to be the king. He had already been anointed in private. He knew who and what he was to become. But now it was time to reveal him to the public, and that's when Saul went missing. Why? It would seem that he did not feel worthy to be a king. He was embarrassed that he had been chosen, and again, revealing yet another reason why God chose him to be the king, the first king. He was humble. God chose a man also of godly courage. When Saul was told that one of the towns had been threatened by an enemy army, he immediately decided to do what he could to help them. Take a look at chapter 11 here, verse number 6. "And the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard those tidings, and his anger was kindled greatly. And he took a yoke of oxen and hewed them in pieces and sent them throughout all the coasts of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, 'Whosoever cometh not forth after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done unto his oxen.' And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent." Not only was Saul quick to pick up the sword and to fight on behalf of the people, but he did so with the right attitude. He didn't present himself as, "Hey, I'm the king, follow me." Very interesting, in verse 7, he pleaded with them, he commanded them to come after Saul and after Samuel. He was linking himself to the man of God, showing the fact that he was leaning on not just the prophet, but also on God himself to deliver a victory. Take a look here at chapter 12, verse number 13. Another problem is here identified in looking at Saul. Problem number 4 is, God means what he says. Chapter 12 and verse 13, "Now therefore, behold, the king whom ye have chosen and whom ye have desired, and behold, the Lord hath set a king over you. If ye will fear the Lord and serve him, and obey his voice and not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall both ye and also the king that reigneth over you continue following the Lord your God. But if ye will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall the hand of the Lord be against you as it was against your fathers. Following the amazing victory against the Ammonites and Saul's first victory as king, Samuel gathered the people together to speak to them about Saul. He wanted to put things in perspective. And he's sharing with them, you got what you wanted. You got your king. God gave to you a victory. How badly do you want to keep it that way? If the people wanted God to continue, they would have to do three things. They'd have to fear God. They'd have to serve him. And they would have to make sure that they obeyed and did not rebel against him. If they did that, they could plan on a lot of victories. They could plan on a lot of good times under this king. But if they violated those conditions, they would then have to contend with God as being their enemy. In recent times, there is a term that has become quite common. That is the term entitlement. When the southern border was opened up for millions of illegal aliens to enter, the Biden administration was doing their best to give them Social Security benefits, free housing. Some were even given Social Security numbers. So how did that work out? When President Trump closed the border and allowed ICE to start arresting those individuals, riots broke out. And the riots did not involve Americans necessarily protesting the illegals being arrested. Illegals were doing the rioting. And they were protesting. And they were many times waving Mexican flags in the streets of American cities. And the reason was because they had acquired a sense of entitlement. Many viewed themselves as having a right to be here and to get things for free just because. During the Black Lives Matter riots in Chicago, looters were breaking into stores and taking whatever they wanted. One young woman was stopped and was asking why she was behaving this way. She had her arms full of stuff that she took off the shelves, clothes, shoes. Why would she do such a thing? Her answer was, what she took was reparations. Slavery had put her people down, took place 150 years ago or so, and so now those new tennis shoes and the new clothes that she had, they were just part of the reparations. That is a sense of entitlement, which basically means that rules for everybody else except for me. And as God's people were coming off of their first victory under the leadership of their new king, God chose to warn them not to get used to it because God's blessings are always tied to God's conditions. Problem number five, people change. After taking a lot of time to describe how good of a man Saul was, we now have to come to terms with the fact that something happened. Something changed him from being the kindest man in the kingdom to the meanest. And unfortunately, what happened to Saul is repeated in church after church after church. And this is the reason why so few Christians are able to finish their race while many others are being disqualified or simply quitting. God blesses, and then what happens way too often is people change. They enjoy God's blessings, and then usually they change for the worse. Saul's downfall came about because of three things that took place in his life. Change number one, he became successful. Take a look at chapter 11, verse 11. "And it was so on the morrow that Saul put the people in three companies, and they came into the midst of the host in the morning watch and slew the Ammonites until the heat of the day. And it came to pass that they which remained were scattered, so that two of them were not left together." Now keep in mind, Saul never had any experience as a king. He'd never even been around one. He had never led an army into battle. He had never been a soldier. And yet Saul managed to pull off a stunning victory against a professional army of soldiers. And it's practically day one of being king. It was such an amazing victory that it united a group of tribes into a kingdom, the nation of Israel. So what happens to a person when they get an enormous taste of success? The most common thing that happens is they think that their success was due to themselves. I did it. Look at me. I worked hard to get here. I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. Nobody handed me anything. I did it all myself. And that individual, because of success, they think that they're smarter than and better than other people. The success is allowed to go to their head, and in the process, they become less spiritual because of the pride. Now let me show you a verse. We're not going to turn there, but I'm going to read a verse to you that God meant to keep successful people humble. Listen to this. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 18, "But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is He that giveth thee power to get wealth." God's the one that gave you the ability to have whatever you have. It wasn't because you're so smart or talented or gifted. God's the one that gave every person the power, the ability to acquire things in this world. There are some people who have mechanical abilities. They can look at a situation and they can tell you probably how to fix it. They just have that mechanical inclination. You don't study to get it. You just have it. There are some people who are gifted with people skills. And they're like the Pied Piper. They've got a magnetic personality. They've got charisma. They didn't take a charm class. They didn't read a book. It comes natural to them because God gave them that power. And others have an uncanny ability to make money. They can just see opportunities that other people can't see. It's not that they read a book. It's not because they're smarter than other people. It's because God gave that ability to them. And God is sharing that truth with us because whatever kind of a gift you have or you think you have, it's not because you're great. It's because you received that as a gift from God. Change number one, he became successful. Went to his head. Change number two, he became powerful. Chapter 11, verse number 12. And the people said unto Samuel, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring them in that we may put them to death. And Saul said, there shall not a man be put to death this day, for today the Lord hath wrought salvation in Israel. I don't know if you picked up on it, but this is the first time in his life that Saul possessed the power of life and death. He could have said, sick them to that crowd. And the sons of Belial, I believe that they were called, they would have been ground to powder. They didn't want Saul. They made it public. They made it known. They didn't want him as their king. And now after this victory, Saul has to pull back on the reins and say, whoa, we're not gonna kill those people. My call, they shall live. That's power. He's exercising the power of a king. And a king possesses the power of life and death. Now, it was a noble gesture on Saul's part, but it gave him a taste of something that he eventually became addicted to. Because power changes people, usually for the worse. Back during COVID, I made a trip to Menards to buy some stuff. I walked in with my mask because I had to. But I pulled it down into my nose. A slight act of defiance, perhaps. When I walked in, there was a mask guard standing there. My guess, making minimum wage. But he was demanding, put your mask on right. Or you didn't have a mask, put on a mask or leave the store. I can remember one time in Menards, I heard shouting and screaming. I walked around to see what in the world was going on. They caught somebody that wasn't wearing a mask. Now here's what I remember more than anything else. A person making minimum wage being the boss, cracking the whip, demanding, put your mask on. Make sure it's up there in the right position. Why be such a jerk about it? Because usually that's what power does. It's called a power trip. And people enjoy being in charge, making decisions, calling the shots. The reason why I think that Saul came to hate David, when David enters his life and he ends up killing Goliath, the women are singing songs about Saul killing his thousands and David his 10,000s. You know why I think that that really bothered Saul? Because he could see that he was losing his power with the people. His influence was waning, and David's was increasing. And when Saul realized that he was losing that power, he went nuts. I've seen it in churches. A key family. They bankrolled the church for a while. Or they're still continuing to bankroll the church. And because they're giving more money than anybody else, the pastor needs to do what they say. I know of a preacher, when he became the pastor of a new church, he started preaching some things in the Bible, some things that the people didn't like, and the key person happened to be the financial secretary, and he quit getting paychecks. It was a power struggle. It happens everywhere, even in church. And typically, one reason why a person will leave a church, a good, solid church, is because they were not able to get their way, realizing it wasn't going to happen. They leave and they start searching for another church where they can grab hold of some power. Happened to Saul? Successful. Went to his head. Power corrupted his heart. Change number three. He became independent. In chapter 13, Saul is once again facing a battle. This time, he's going to fight the Philistines. He had gathered his army together. He had been told by Samuel to wait for Samuel to arrive. Don't make a move till I get there. But after 7 days, Saul decided to call an audible. He decided, if something's going to happen, my men are going to leave me. I've got to strike while the iron's hot. So he gave up and offered a sacrifice that Samuel was supposed to have done. As soon as he did so, take a look at verse number 10 in chapter 13. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, "What hast thou done?" And Saul said, "Because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed." It's your fault. "And that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore," said I, "the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering." And Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee." Every pastor has seen it over and over and over again until they have the script memorized. A person or a couple, they get saved. They get into church. And they're like Saul used to be. They're thrilled to be there. They're sitting there soaking up the preaching. They're making conscious changes in their lives. And because of that, they enjoy the preaching. They enjoy the fellowship, being around God's people. And they enjoy the spiritual growth that God is giving them. Time passes. 3, 4, 5 years. And they begin to get a taste of success. They're getting promotions, making more money. God is blessing them in so many areas, it's obvious to other people how God is blessing them and how good they're doing. They're not driving that rattletrap car anymore. They can afford a nice car now. They're not living in a below average rental house. They can afford to go out and buy a nice one. They can now afford things that once upon a time they could not afford. And as time passes, with that success also comes a degree of power in the form of influence. Their success has created influence in their lives, and people are now looking to them, sometimes for advice. They arrive at the place where their voice carries weight. They enjoy having an opinion. And then they arrive at a place where their success and power creates the impression that they are no longer subject to the same rules and guidelines as other people are. The church is no longer a special place. It's just a place. The pastor is no longer a man of God. He's just a man that stands behind a pulpit and preaches some things from the Bible and throws out his opinions about things. The Bible has become less important in their lives, and it's viewed more as a book of suggestions, many of which are outdated. And before long, that person has become not only detached from what used to be important to them, but they have become a different kind of person. They become like Saul, who deliberately ignored Samuel and did as he pleased again and again and again. Turn, if you would, to the book of Acts. Last passage we'll take a look at, Acts chapter 13. Believe it or not, Saul is mentioned in the New Testament. And this passage is going to highlight problem number 6, and that is the fact that decisions carry consequences. In the book of Acts, Paul one day stood in a synagogue and he started preaching to the Jews, and in that sermon, he decided to give them a quick rundown of Jewish history. In Acts chapter 13 and verse 18, "And about the time of 40 years suffered he their manners in the wilderness. And when he had destroyed 7 nations in the land of Canaan, he divided their land to them by lot. And after that, he gave unto them judges about the space of 450 years until Samuel the prophet. And afterward, they desired a king. And God gave unto them Saul the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, by the space of 40 years. Now we have this idea. Sometimes it's hard when we read the Bible, sometimes when you go from one verse to the next, there may have been 100 years gone by, or even more. The Bible sometimes compresses the truth to such a degree that we kind of lose sight and lose track of the timing. We have this idea that when David came along, Saul got envious of David's success, and then he hunted David down as an outlaw for about 6 years, and then Saul got into a battle alongside Jonathan, his son, and Saul ended up committing suicide on the battlefield, and then David replaced him as king. But it wasn't that nice and tidy, nor was it of a short duration. Saul, the man who had such a great beginning, quickly stumbled as the new king, and in the process, he became a mean and bitter king. And he remained a tyrant for about the next 38 years. God allowed him to remain on the throne for a real long time to teach the people a very valuable lesson. And the lesson was and is, decisions will always have consequences. God tried to warn them, but they insisted on having their way. And so God let them have their king. And then they had to live for the next 4 decades with a bad decision. And for many of them, it was for the rest of their lives. Let's bow for prayer. Father,